And now it's time for Drinking with Yoda. Hey, Yoda, will you pass me that screwball peanut butter flavored whiskey? I'd like to try it.
No, try not. Do or do not. There is no try.
Okay, fine. Can you pass me the bottle? I'd like to do a shot of it.
You are reckless.
I am not reckless. I'm just looking for a little adventure, a little excitement.
Adventure. Excitement. Jedi craves not these things.
Jedi? What are you talking about, man? I'm just a guy who hosts a booze podcast. Now come on, pass me that bottle.
The boy has no patience.
You will learn patience.
Who the hell are you talking to?
Much anger in him. Like his father.
Look, Yoda, this is getting way too heavy. All I'm asking for is that you pass me that bottle of screwball peanut butter flavored whiskey so I can pour some in a glass and try some. Do some.
Will he finish what he begins?
Of course I'll finish it. I mean, yeah, peanut butter whiskey sounds pretty awful, but hell, I'll try anything once. I'm not afraid.
Yeah. You will be. You will be.
Well, pour yourself a glass, sit for a spill. It's time to have some fun. Let's do a little thinking, some picking and a drinking. Well, this is what we're drinking with Dan Dunn.
Welcome to the program. What we're drinking. What am I drinking? I'll tell you what I'm drinking right now. I got a little glass in my hand, a little ice on here. I'm drinking a little Suntory. That's right, Suntory whiskey, Japanese whiskey.
For relaxing times, make it Suntory time.
Coming up in just a few minutes, I'm going to be chatting with a man named Sed Moses. Sed is, if not the most influential guy on the Los Angeles bar scene. He's certainly one of them. He's got a ton of bars out here. He really helped kickstart the craft cocktail resurgence that happened at the beginning of this century. He's also got a famous dad. His dad, Ed Moses, was part of a group of artists out here in California called the Cool School. Ed and Larry Bell and Billy Al Bengston and Ed Russia. There was a lot of big artists, and Sed Moses' father, Ed, was part of that. We're going to be talking about that and the bar scene, building the Los Angeles bar scene, what happened when COVID hit, what's next. A lot of chatter coming up in just a few minutes. Also, a reminder to follow me at The Imbiber on Instagram and Twitter, at WWD_podcast on Instagram. I did the Adam Carolla Show. I'm on there every month, and I have my latest one was Monday, January 24th. We drank on that episode Michter's US 1 Whiskey Siempre Tequila, the Reposado, and Don Q Rum. Speaking of big people in Los Angeles, one of Los Angeles' biggest and most best bartenders, Paul Sanguinetti, joined me in studio with Carolla, whipped up a couple of cocktails. So please go check out the Adam Carolla Show, the Monday, January 24th episode. I am excited. Right before I got on here to record, I purchased tickets to see the great G-Love of G-Love and Special Sauce. He's touring, not with the sauce. I don't know what happened to the Special Sauce. They're out. Now it's just the juice. It's G-Love and the juice. And G, his name's Garrett. He's actually an old friend of mine. He's touring, and I love him, and he'd love to see him. He's playing the Troubadour, the iconic Troubadour venue here in West Hollywood on March 26th. I just got tickets. If you want to see him, he's touring all over the country. Go to philadelphonic.com, and there's plenty of info on the G Love and the Juice tour. Now, getting those tickets got me to thinking about the good old days. I had a, prior to this show, I used to co-host a show called Drinky Fun Time. Everybody loved Drinky Fun Time. I co-hosted it with a good friend of mine named Emma Patterson. And a few years ago, we were in Louisville, Kentucky, broadcasting, recording live from Louisville at a festival called Bourbon and Beyond. And we actually caught up with Garrett G. Love right after his set. And I just wanted to play a little bit of that interview because it was fun and I was definitely tipsy. Way more tipsy than I am now. I was drinking bourbon, not Suntory. But here, check this little bit out.
Yo, could I get a cold beverage? I need some leverage. A sweaty ass has a lemonade.
You know what that means?
Finley in the house tonight.
You know what that song means? You know who we have on the show right now? Ladies and gentlemen, Philly's own Garrett Dutton, a.k.a. G-Love. Yeah!
Where's your sauce?
Oh, and we're getting
Here comes some sauce
some
right
drinks.
Now.
Some, what do we got here? A little, some Jim Beam delivering drinks to us. I love that.
That's
yes.
A good, we're living the high life now.
Look at this. Throw that over there.
One more cheers. You know,
one
the,
more
the
cheers.
Duttons like to cheers them up.
Cheers, cheers, producer Bo. Cheers, Dan.
Cheers, Emma. Cheers, cheers. So, can I call you Garrett? Because I know you as Garrett.
I just want to say, you know, so your uncle.
That's right.
Dennis.
My Uncle Dennis.
Uncle Dennis worked with my father, Gary.
Yeah.
Right? So.
Way back in the day.
Way back in the day.
You're going to dig up some dirt.
Oh, well, I don't know.
Were you in, was it your cousins who had
Dennis
the
Mike,
Men
Dennis
at Work cover band?
It might have been.
No, it wasn't even a cover band. It was a Men at Work air guitar lip syncing band. So,
by the way, Dennis and Mike, get ready for your embarrassment right now. Here it is.
So I remember we went out to the Poconos to visit with Uncle Dennis and the family, and I was probably, you know, 8, and Dennis and Mike were probably 10 or 12, and go down to the basement. It was the coolest thing I ever saw, these older kids with the light show, basically lip syncing and not, you know, air guitaring along. They had the whole Men at Work show.
Oh, my. So then after that, what happened was years later, I was a big G Love fan, and I was going somewhere, and my cousin says, "Oh, yeah, we know Garrett." I'm like, "You know Garrett? You know him?" They're like, "Yeah." So we ended up hooking up this thing, and Garrett and I had a that was probably 15 years ago, 12, 13
really?
Years
Come
ago.
Come on, and the rest.
Long time ago in New York City.
2,000 drinks ago.
We had a very big night out in New York City. So today, G Love and Special Sauce tore the house down, right, Emma?
I have had so many of your tracks, but I've never seen you in person. I'm from England. And I just want to first of all say thank you, because I can now say my second word in American, but it's very distinctly on the East Coast. I say sauce.
Sauce.
I can't say anything else. My first is water. That's it.
Water. Water.
It.
Water.
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 Water. Water.
Sauce.
Water.
Water.
Wood. Water.
I'm still getting it wrong?
Water. Like wood.
Good
it's
God.
It's a tri-state area thing.
That's a water. But when, by the way, when she said sauce, we did this a while ago on the show, and she was trying to affect a Boston accent. So Garrett lives in Boston now.
Yeah.
Okay.
But sauce is not Boston.
Oh.
How would you say sauce in Boston? Sauce.
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 I don't know.
My
accents are terrible. I always sound like a Jamaican leprechaun, any type of accent I tried to.
You actually said, when you sang today, you said sauce.
Sauce.
And
sauce.
I was thinking,
my baby's got sauce.
Yeah.
Carry on.
Come on. Go.
She got sauce. Ho. Your baby ain't sweet like mine. She got sauce. Yeah, that's how it goes.
I mean, it's such a privilege to have you on the show, because I'm sorry. I think you rap, right? You rap really well. Look at him go.
So,
he's brilliant.
So he, you know where he got his start from? Schooly D.
Schooly D.
Schooly D in Philadelphia, right? Don't tell me that wasn't a major inspiration for you.
Oh, yeah, man. Like, so growing up in Philly, so I was in the 80s, you know, hip-hop started, and, you know, I was a young teenager, and this was like the greatest, coolest type of music ever, and it was maybe it was like akin if you were in like the growing up in the 50s and you know Elvis came out or whatever, but it was like this type of ground shaking music, and there was this program on Power 99 FM.
Which was an R&B station.
And Friday night they had a program called Lady B's Street Beat, and we would record it on a cassette tape, and you know that's the first time you ever heard like Public Enemy, Terminator X, and Schoolie D, and Steady B, and the sound was scary. Like I remember hearing Terminator X and that the sample. I mean, it scared the shit out of you when you're. You know, 13-year-old kid, you're like, I mean, and the Beastie Boys, too. I played in this basketball league in Philadelphia. I was one of, you know, three or four white kids in the league.
Yeah.
And my buddy comes over to me and said, hey, Garrett, put these headphones on. He put the headphones on, and it was the Beastie Boys. Hold it now, hit it. And I was like, oh, that's cool. He goes, yeah, they're white, just like you. And I was like, no, they're not. They're not white. White people can't do that. And now I'm doing it.
And that was when that...
Oh, the memories. I miss concerts. Hopefully it's all coming back soon. Really, it needs to come back. Enough, COVID. Enough of you. Be gone. We've had it. I mean, it's a little rough right now because it's still cold. It's cold. It's winter.
I know this is hard for you, but winter is coming. We know what's coming with it. We can't face it alone.
Yes, yes, Jon Snow. Yes, I know. So yeah, people are gathered in, so you got to be careful now, but I'm telling you, the spring is coming and I feel it. I just feel like things are going to get better. I'm taking this show on the road in the spring. Got some plans. We're going to hopefully be doing a show in New York. We're going to live recording in New York. We're going to be doing one out here in California, maybe in Denver, Colorado. I got a lot of plans, people. A lot of plans, and I want you on board. Also, that reminds me, reach out to me with any questions, comments. I'd love to address them on the show. If you want me to actually answer a voice question, take out your phone, record a voice memo, and then email it to info@whatwe'redrinking.com. That's info@whatwe'redrinking.com. Email that audio file with your question or comment, and I promise you, as long as it's not offensive, I'll play it on the show because I want to hear from you. I really do. All right. Said Moses. Everybody ready to listen to some Said Moses? I am. As anyone who pays even the slightest bit of attention to me knows, Fresh Victor is my favorite mixer brand in the world. You know what? Screw it. It's my favorite in all the universe. They make 100% fresh, juice-based, cold-pressed, preservative-free, refrigerator-worthy cocktail mixers. All their ingredients are real, they're all recognizable, easy to pronounce. Lime, mint, ginger. See what I mean? Easy. Fresh Victor mixers are kosher, non-GMO, vegan, gluten-free, and light on calories. Although they don't taste like it. Their 7 award-winning flavors mix deliciously with any spirit, wine, or sparkling water. Not only does Fresh Victor live and breathe sustainable practices, but they champion them. All their ingredients are fair trade, the packaging is recyclable, and the juicing plant is 100% solar. You get the drift. Right now, Fresh Victor is offering a pretty juicy deal to my listeners. Simply go to freshvictor.com, fill up your shopping cart, and at checkout, enter promo code WWD20. Get 20% off your order. Now's the time to treat yourself to the very best mixers on the market. And that's Fresh Victor. What are we drinking? Oh, hell yeah. Batiste Rum. You know what I'm talking about? I friggin' love this brand. Batiste Rum is the first sustainable American craft rum. What's that mean? Well, it means that Batiste's proprietary production process from ground to bottle has been rigorously reviewed and validated as being carbon negative. It's the only known beverage alcohol in the world to have a climate positive natural production process without the purchase of carbon offsets. Okay, you're probably still like, yeah, but what's that mean? It means you can feel good about drinking it, my friends. Batiste Rum is made from 100% pure fresh cane juice, not molasses or sugar crystals. Most importantly, it's an incredibly damn delicious rum to be enjoyed neat or in cocktails. Batiste Rum has not one but two kick-ass offers for my listeners. That's you. Go to BatisteRum.com. That's BatisteRhum.com. Fill up your cart and enter code WWD15 at checkout to get 15% off all orders. But if you want their delicious Reserve Rum, you can enter code RESERVE, get 20% off. Batiste Rum is the absolute shiz. Proof that great taste with true sustainability is not a goal for tomorrow, but a reality today. Joining me now is the founder, Chief Vision Officer of Pouring with Heart. That's a hospitality company that operates bars, restaurants, and beer halls across the country. He's got a new book out called, appropriately, Pouring with Heart, the essential magic behind the bartenders we love. Very pleased to welcome to the show my old pal, Sed Moses. Sed, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's great to see you, Dan, even on Zoom here. It's great to see you.
It's funny, man. I wish it was in person as well. I was going through some old photos recently looking, I had to find something, but, and I came across these old pictures from the Playboy Mansion. We were there, one of the pajama parties. Do you remember this?
Oh, yeah, sure.
It's me, you, a bunch of the LA, it was actually LA bartending royalty and me. It was you, Eric Alperin, Simon Ford was there, Dave Kaplan, and we were all in our PJs.
All in our pajamas,
at the Playboy Mansion. Those were the days. Hef was still alive.
Good times.
There was no global pandemic. It was a different time.
Different time, better time, but we'll get back there. Some good times, I'm sure, in the future.
So this, I've been reading your book. I haven't finished it yet, but I'm mostly through it. And first off, congrats on it. You did it with Eric Cardona, so you had some help writing the book as well?
Yeah, I spent the first 2 years writing it myself, and then Eric came in the last year to help me clean it up. He was a professional writer. That's not me. I'm a bar guy, so he came in and helped me clean up the book and get it ready for prime time.
So right off the bat in the book, you state unequivocally that, quote, we go to bartenders, not to bars. Explain that. What do you mean by that?
That was actually Dale DeGroff that wrote the foreword.
Oh, that's Dale's thing up front. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that's Dale's thing. Well, that's all right. But Dale, you know, Dale and I think all of us, we have bartenders we love, and we sometimes go to a bar just to see that bartender, and we know they're going to make a solid drink, and we have a good relationship already built with them, and we do that rather instead of just going to a specific bar. We go to see a specific bartender, and in our company, we're all about promoting the careers for bartenders and creating. Giving them careers and a platform to grow their business within our bar group.
Well, one of the things about, for those of you don't, maybe unfamiliar with Sed, you were certainly one of the driving forces here in revitalizing the bar scene in downtown Los Angeles back in the early 2000s. Can you talk a little bit about how you got started? I know your first bar, and you talk about this in the book, was the Golden Gopher, which was at the time you went in and ended up right before you ended up acquiring it, it was literally being run by a gang, correct?
Yeah. The 18th Street Gang, which is at that time was a very dangerous gang. And apparently it's still around, but I had this vision for, with all the great buildings downtown, of bringing back downtown LA by creating a bar district down there. And at the same time, bringing back a great cocktail culture in Los Angeles that was sadly missing at that time. So in order to do that, my plan was to build 10 bars downtown, basically on Skid Row, and create a bar hopping district where you can hop from bar to bar. And then that in turn would bring in restaurants and bring people back downtown. So that was the bold vision. The problem was it was Skid Row and it was dangerous and there was no built-in customer base down there, so we had to really build it ourselves and build a community ourselves around those bars.
And you did that. You did that as well. I will say this, and the caveat here is COVID has changed the calculation on so many things, but let's forget about COVID, even just pre-COVID, right before COVID. While there are so many great bars and restaurants in downtown LA, still for me, the issue that I have with going there, and you alluded to Skid Row, is it's bad, right? It's bad downtown. And that's the result of a lot of issues that obviously you don't have any control over. But I still find myself having a hard time fully enjoying myself, knowing what's happening right outside the door. How do you, as someone who's got, you know, some key properties down there, what are your thoughts on, and again, anybody that's out there listening that isn't familiar with Los Angeles, we have a serious problem in downtown Los Angeles, not only with homelessness, but crime and everything that comes along with it. And there doesn't seem to be a real plan to deal with it. So what are you, as someone who's very invested in downtown Los Angeles, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, we feel fortunate that despite the tough environment, believe it or not, it was much worse 20 years ago when we first started downtown. It was had the highest murder rate in the United States in downtown and South Central. And it's actually gotten a lot better, but it is still sketchy. But for some reason, our business is really strong down there, and we've done well during COVID. Obviously, we had to shut down for about a year, and that was really tough. But we've recovered, and our business now is back and really strong. I just think it sometimes it's young people, they don't mind going out in areas that are a little sketchy because they don't want to run into their parents, you know.
Guys like me. While you were saying that, I was thinking that I'm like, I sound like such an old fuck, don't I? I'm like, oh, I'm scary.
Well, I'm right there with you. I'm an older guy now too. I've been bar hopping for 40 years now. So, but I still love it down there. There's a lot of colorful characters and so many great bars, and you're not paying the high drink prices you might be in other parts of town with higher lease rates and the celebrity factor and all that sort of thing. So, and it's great downtown in terms of bar hopping because you can literally within a couple blocks hit three or four great bars, you know?
And that is a benefit because, you know, this is a commuter town and when you can find those little pockets where, you know, I'm in Venice, we sort of have that here, although walking a few, you know, but it's all close enough down here.
Right.
And I've actually wondered that. Have you ever thought about coming to the west side of town? Because most of all your stuff's east.
Yeah, we're keeping our eye out. We open a new bar on West Hollywood, actually, just late last year. We opened Les Perles over there, and it's doing well. And we have a brew pub on La Brea and 8th Street now. Nothing yet in Venice, though. Can't wait to get one out there for you. But so we're steadily moving further west. And at the same time, we're also building in these other cities where we're finding a lot of opportunity in Denver, Austin. We have 5 places now.
So Seven Grand is kind of the marquee property that's going around the country. I've been to the one in Denver, right? I think I hit you up when I was going there. Yeah. And there's one in Austin as well, right? I believe I went to that one. Yeah,
in Austin. There's one in San Diego as well.
That's right. And the original is at 7th and Grand in downtown LA. And I tell people all the time, there's 3 places I'd say on my list. If somebody says, what are the best whiskey bars in Los Angeles? You can certainly make a very strong case that 7 Grand is the best whiskey bar. I happen to be fond of another one over here just because it's closer to me, the Daily Pint over here in Santa Monica, which has an amazing selection. But in terms of atmosphere and coolness factor, if you ever get a chance, go check out 7 Grand. They just have a collection that is world-class, right? I mean, it's a world-class whiskey collection.
It really is. Yeah, we're really proud of it. And, I love whiskey personally. And then in the back room behind 7 Grand is Bar Jackalope too, which is also really special, a Japanese style whiskey bar. I think you've probably been back there.
I've been there as well. Yeah. It's in fact, the master, I don't think call him master blender, but from Centauri, they did an event down there and it was at Bar Jackalope and it was great. So, by the way, speaking of West Side, there was a property that was coming, and I was like, I wonder, it would have been so perfect if you would have somehow gotten this property, because it's a place right by the Venice sign in Venice, and it was called Larry's. And the reason I thought of you, and obviously you know, is it was named after Larry Bell, who's a very famous artist from Los Angeles, who was good friends, I believe, with your father, Ed Moses, who was a central figure in post-war West Coast art, right? Your dad was what it was, the cool school, they called it, right? Ed Ruscha, Robert Irwin, Larry Bell, Altoon, Ken Price, right? Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, that whole scene, They were a bunch of renegade artists at the time, not looking. Billy Al Bingston was another one, and they were part of this gallery called Ferris Gallery that actually gave Andy Warhol his first solo show with the Campbell Soup Cans. So LA art history, and my dad was a central figure and a badass character, and he passed away a few years ago, but still feel like he's riding shotgun with me. He was a great inspiration for me.
You talk about him in the book. You said, you know, one of the, I thought it was really touching. You talked a lot about your dad's confidence. He was very comfortable, I guess, being in front of people and whatnot. And then you compared it to your, what you called your lack of confidence, at least early on. But what I thought was really nice, man. He said, you gained your confidence in a bar. You said the men and the women that you've met in bars gave you access, and this is a quote, to a fuel you did not know you had. Tell us a little bit about what you mean by that.
Yeah, well, I think there's something to bartenders every day. They're welcoming and opening their hearts to total strangers. And you know, that's something I've always been nervous to do. A lot of people grow up that way. Don't talk to strangers, right? But bartenders, they you know, after a period of time bartending, I think they build this courage to talk to total strangers and open up to strangers and let those strangers open up to them. And just being around those people gave me the confidence to be able to have conversations with strangers and with just about anybody. Now I'm comfortable talking to anybody. And I think bartenders and bars in general were the fuel for me to be able to do that. I really look up to bartenders and the misfits that work in our industry. I'll probably include you in that list as well, Dan, and a great cast of characters, and they're my people. And so that's what really brought me into the business, and is why I wrote this book too.
So you opened Golden Gopher. Let's take it back now. We're talking like 2002. You not open it, you take it over and you revitalize it. What comes next? What was the next property after that?
The next one was Broadway Bar. I opened, it was pretty much a bar a year after that. Opened Broadway Bar. Then I took over Casey's Irish Pub, then opened Seven Grand. Then it was Kohl's and The Varnish, Las Perlas, Kanya Rum Bar, Tony's Saloon. You know, it was one after another. So we ended up opening about 12 bars in the first 10 years of downtown.
And The Varnish you mentioned, that was a partnership. You had Eric working with Eric Alperin. Am I right on this? And Sasha Petrosky, the late Sasha Petrosky, from Milk and Honey, New York fame. And didn't Varnish win Bar of the Year, Best Bar at Tales of the Cocktail at the Spirit Awards?
It did, yeah.
I believe I was on stage when that happened. I somehow have a picture of standing on the stage with Eric, I believe. I don't know how. Maybe I just crashed it or something. I don't know. Or maybe I imagined it. I could have been drunk and just imagined I was on stage.
Well, it was a proud moment for Los Angeles to bring that award back to L.A. for all of us that love
Los Angeles. Yeah, we kind of get the shitty. Okay, this is a good point here, and I want to bring this up. So people know, when I mentioned the Spirited Awards, there's a thing called Tales of the Cocktail. Happens every year down in, it did happen every year prior to COVID in New Orleans. And they have this thing called the Spirited Awards, which is kind of like the Oscars of our industry. Don't get me started on me being shut out constantly, but that's all right. That's okay. You know, hey, it's fine. I'm not bitter, Zed. I'm really not. I am so fucking bitter, just so you know. But okay, they diss me every year. But The part that really bothers me is when they do the list and they do the best bars, it is disproportionately New York City or San Francisco, and I don't get it. I don't. Do you agree that there is sort of a, I don't know, they have something against Los Angeles?
There's a little bit of a bias, I must admit, but that's why it made it so sweet to win that award that year and bring it back to Los Angeles and at least open the door again to Los Angeles being considered world-class city for bars, which it really is. And I love New York for bars, and I love San Francisco for bars. There's great bars across this country, but we deserve as much recognition as most cities. And it was nice to win that award that year. But yeah, disproportionately, New York seems like it has a lot of awards, but a lot of people I think that are on the panel also live in New York City. So maybe they're bars they're more familiar with. So there you go.
What I had a very funny thing happen. It's interesting when the New York people come out here, maybe they're not as familiar with LA, and a lot of the publicists in our industry are based in New York. They put together an event, and it was a long time ago, but I remember it started at Kohl's and the Varnish. And then the plan was to, they got horse and buggies. Okay. Which you don't really want to do that in downtown Los Angeles. You know, it's not Central Park. So we get in these horse and buggies and we're going down the Nickel, you know, like in Skid Row. I mean, we are going through the heart of Skid Row. To describe this, folks, it's kind of like, it's this post-apocalyptic hellscape, basically. You know, it's just tents and people strewn all over the street. And here we are, a bunch of journalists in our horse and buggies, like a Disney fucking parade, waving. And I'm like, this can't end well. Like, someone might die.
Surreal.
And then the funniest part of this was, do you remember, what was the bar that our old friend Aiden had that was the Edison, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Which was one of the first sort of big, bold craft cocktail resurgence. It was a giant space, and it was in the old Edison building, right?
Sure. I helped develop that too. I was the majority owner of that.
Yeah. So we were going. So this.
But yeah, that's a great place.
So the other part of that was when we were coming from wherever we were coming, it's up on a hill. People that, if you're familiar with the Disney Concert Hall, it's right by that, right? So, and when I say a hill, this is like a San Francisco style hill that we got to go up to get to this thing. And we're in horse and carriages. And I'm like, are these horses going to make it? The horses, like, we're going and we're going really slow. And I'm like, are we going to die? Are they trying to fucking kill us right now? They just took us through Skid Row, sitting in a carriage. And now we're going directly. It was like, what's the street in Lombard Street? What's that street in San Francisco? Yeah, it was Lombard, like that. Yeah. And the old memories.
That's hysterical.
And now a word from one of our dream sponsors, Miller Lite. Bowling tournament, circa 1982.
The score's all even.
Last frame, who's up?
Rodney.
Rodney!
You gotta be a mistake.
Hey, you kidding? It's a piece of cake.
All we need is one pin, Rodney.
Rodney. Like beer from Miller. Everything you always wanted in a beer, and less.
I didn't get my turn yet. I'm gonna break this time.
You talk about in the book, I found fascinating, you talk about the legends, because a lot of this is sort of a lot of what the book is about is practical advice on how to be in the bar industry, how to excel in the bar industry. You give from somebody who obviously knows what they're talking about, which if you're thinking about being in the bar industry, even if you're in the bar industry, I highly recommend picking up Pouring with Heart. You talk about the legends. Who are some of the living legends that we have in this industry right now?
Well, the man that wrote the foreword that's clearly a New Yorker, Dale DeGroff, we all love him. I'm sure you've had him on your show or talked to him. Yeah, he's an amazing guy. And he's a New Yorker that loves L.A. and loves L.A. bars. And he's always supported me in a big way. And he's just one of those amazing. He's one of those old school bartenders. Yeah, he makes great drinks, but he looks every customer in the eye and he makes sure everyone's taken care of in the bar. And he just projects love out to everyone around him. he's constant rock and tour, and you gotta love Dale DeGroff. He's just truly one of the living legends that we have. I listed a few more. Sasha Petrosky, who was my partner. Yeah, he was a trailblazer in cocktails, but he was a person that started, started the careers of so many people by being such a giving, loving person, and started the careers of Eric Alperin and so many more, and bars all over the world. But I also listed somebody that maybe people haven't heard of that's our top bartender that exercises what we call pouring with heart to a huge degree, that started at 48 years old as a barback and became a legendary bartender with us by the time he was like 53, never worked in the bar business before that. But he has literally thousands of regulars, Miguel Alonso. And he has lines of people waiting to get in just to be served by him. They won't be served by anybody else.
And what bar is he at?
He's at Las Perlas.
Okay, downtown. Which is downtown, right, very close to Kohl's and the Varnish, right?
Yeah, right across the street. Yeah. And he is a true legend. And he just projects so much love. He makes everyone feel like they're the only one in the room, and visualizes every person. Every stranger is his friend, and everybody that comes back is my family. And he just makes everyone feel so special. They can't wait to come back to the bar just to see him.
Well, you mentioned that pouring with heart. What is that philosophy? If you had to distill it down, what does it mean?
You know, I break it down in the book and show scientifically why it builds regulars in a bar. To me, that's the most important thing for the success of a bar. Our bartender is building regulars. It's not just making great drinks. Your drinks should be great. They got to be good. They got to be consistent. They got to be balanced. But that's something that you can, hand-eye coordination, a great recipe, you'll pick it up. But the ability to connect with people is more important. It's a people business. I think we all, during COVID, we had access to booze, but we missed the bars to go out to, and the camaraderie and the magic of being in a great environment and having a great time with at your favorite local bar. And that magic is tied to what I call pouring with heart, the ability for the bartender to project love into the room and make everyone feel welcome and remember everyone's name and what they drink and the operation they had last year, and make sure that everyone feels comfortable, safe, appreciated, and seen and heard for who they are. So that's a little bit of a longer description.
No, but I think it's a fantastic way to put it. We've talked about COVID, and I think I've been saying this for a year and a half. I think we're coming out of it. Well, maybe, hopefully we will. What's going on? Is someone who's got, I mean, you got a lot of bars. Like, what is your outlook for what's coming up?
Yeah, we feel really confident at this stage. This wave has been more, none of our staff has been seriously ill. This wave is not life-threatening, and sure, it's forced a lot of us to go into quarantine. That got it. I got it over Christmas myself. But our staff is still really gung-ho about the future. They didn't get too sick. They got back to work within 10 days, and business has really not slowed down as much as you'd think it would have due to this as well. So it feels like each progressive version of COVID is getting less potent, and hopefully we're hitting some sort of herd immunity with the fact that everyone I know has had this thing now.
Yeah. So except me, knock on wood.
Really? Wow, that's amazing.
As far as I know, I haven't had it. I haven't.
I think with this version, a lot of us have had it, and we didn't even know it because it's. I was basically asymptomatic myself. I had like a runny nose for 2 days, no fever, nothing, and just kept testing positive for about 8-9 days. So I think a lot of people have had it, this version, without not even knowing it. But hopefully this is the last straw, that a lot of us have built up the immunities, and that this thing is getting weaker and we're getting stronger. So
from your mouth to God's ears, brother. I hope you're right, man. I hope you're right. Now, before I let you go, I want to ask you, man, you with all these places and we're gotta have you back on sometime to talk, get more into just the nitty gritty of the bars themselves. But some of the you've had to have seen some crazy shit, right? Especially with having bars in downtown LA. Can anything come to mind of just like, whoa, that happened?
Well, I think there's tons of crazy stories, of course, and some of them are in my book and some are in Eric Alperin's book, which is also great. I recommend it, Unvarnished.
Unvarnished, yes.
He gives a lot of backroom stories that you might not have heard.
Eric was one of our first guests, by the way. It was in the beginning of COVID. That's how long ago it was. He opened a bar out in Pioneer Town. Are you involved in that one or the red?
No,
what
no,
is it? The red cat? Is that what it's called?
Red Dog Saloon.
Red Dog Saloon. That's right. So Pioneer Town's out by Joshua Tree, and Pioneer Town was a town that was created by the old cowboys of television and movie fame. It was like Roy Rogers, right? Gene Autry. They basically built this town as a movie set. And then there was a bar there, the Red Dog Saloon, that was used as part of the set. And then I think it was a real bar, and then it went away. And Eric and some other guys took this thing over. And I went to the opening out there. It was all outside because this was at the beginning of COVID, the height of COVID. But I can't wait to get back out there and check that place out.
Too. Oh, it's a great bar. I highly recommend it, even though it's not one of my places. I love Alperin, and he's a brother to me, and half the team there used to work with me at Seven Grand, but back in the day, his partners, his brother Jean Michel and Jeff Baker, great, amazing guys, and they're still family to me, and they've done a great job with that place. And I went out for my birthday last year, and we had a blast.
Maybe we'll have to get a road trip. Me and you, a little road trip out there.
Yeah, let's do it. Right next to Pappy and Harriet's too. Which
another world. Legendary bar. Yeah. I mean, Pappy and Harriet's is a little roadhouse, and it has the distinction of being a place where some of the biggest musicians of all time, I think the Stones played there, Paul McCartney played there, Foo Fighters played there. You know,
I saw Johnny Cash, Bob Dylan. I've seen some incredible.
And everybody, so you understand, this is on top of a hill in the middle of nowhere, like right on the outskirts of Joshua Tree. And it's an old sort of honky tonk. It's a big spot, but like, I don't even know, why did it become such a destination for all of these artists?
Exactly. It's so cool though. It's got such, it's just a legendary roadhouse atmosphere. I think people just love playing there. Why not? It's great.
So wait, you still owe me a story.
I got a story.
Yeah,
let's hear it for you. Yeah, well, it's one I share a little bit in the book too, and the story of how the condition of the Golden Gopher when we took that place over. It was a bar that had been around since 1905. Apparently, Teddy Roosevelt, oldest bar in LA, that's still operating. And apparently, Teddy Roosevelt rode in on horseback at the opening of that bar. Legend has it. And but by the time we took it over in 2002, it was run by an 18th Street gang.
There was a different kind of horse going on there.
Exactly. All the walls were kicked in. There were feces stains on the broken glass throughout the bathrooms. I mean, you wanted to throw up as soon as you walked in there. And I went to meet with the manager of the bar, and he was in that same bathroom where I almost threw up myself. My partner did throw up, and a urinal already caked in vomit. And there, crouched in the corner, is the manager of the bar smoking a crack pipe. I must have fallen off the calendar somehow because he forgot the meeting. But we still met, walked up to the bar itself, tried to order a drink. But before we got up there, the bartender said, I don't know if I can say this on your show, but what the fuck do you want? I say, well, we'd like a drink. How about a drink? He goes, well, you fucking pay up front. So handing him the money, he had two bottles behind the bar, gin and gin, you know, two crappy gins, by the way. And bought my drink. He takes the money and puts it on his, there's no cash register. He just drops it in his own wallet right in front of the manager. So whole place was just a front for drug trade, and we took that place over.
How was your gin? Just the gin and gin. There's no tonic. There's nothing going on. Ice.
There was no tonic. They gave me gin and soda, and with basically melted ice at that point. There was no real ice.
Here's a good thing, though, said, if the guy's on crack, you get you have the upper hand in the negotiation, right? A little bit, right? You can outmaneuver him a little.
Well, it turned out they were a year behind on paying rent, so we just had to negotiate with the landlord at that point. And the landlord was scared to throw him out because they had death threats from the gang. So we had to.
Well, were you nervous at all? I was wondering, because I read that story in the book, and I wondered, were you concerned at all that they weren't leaving, even if you bought it?
Yeah. It was concerning. And we had death threats for a couple of years when we took over that bar. So we had to get through that too. But as I talk about in the book, that kind of adversity that we had is what led to the amazing culture and our family now and the amazing people we have. So, and also gave us the feeling that we could fight through anything, including a global pandemic, which we're fighting through now and surviving and feeling more optimistic than ever before about our family and our bars.
By the way, I rarely issue death threats, but once I was at the Varnish and I felt like the Campari, there was a little too much Campari in my Negroni. And so I did, I called in a bomb threat, but I just want to let you know that right now, make sure my drinks.
Well, that was you.
Yeah, that was me. The drink's not balanced.
I thought we were friends, man.
Oh, you got one more. I know I keep saying I'm going to let you go, but one more thing. So Kohl's has the French dip, right?
Yeah.
Can we settle this? Because there's another place that says who invented the French dip?
Exactly. But, you know, it's a friendly rivalry. We love Felipe's too. It's a great place, but they're more of a lunch spot. We're more of a dinner and drinks cocktail spot. So
I can't definitively say both places, but
the history we have is, I mean, Kohl's opened 6 months earlier than Felipe's. So, I mean, that alone should settle it. You know, we were in the original location that we opened in 1908. They moved to a second location, and they ultimately opened 6 months later than we did. So, you know, I think it's a friendly rivalry. We're both winning from the controversy, but we know that we invented it. We opened 6 months before they did. So you can check
it. You heard it here from said Moses mouth, from the mouth of babes, as they say, the French dip. Definitively invented at Kohl's. Said, it's great to see you, man. And I look forward to seeing you in person for sure. Whether that's downtown LA or we actually take that road trip out to the desert. Everybody, pick up Pouring with Heart, the essential magic behind the bartenders we love. Said Moses with Eric Cardona and a foreword by the great Dale DeGroff. It's available now everywhere, right? Get it on Amazon, anywhere.
Yeah.
Books are sold.
Yeah, the audio version too is available on Audible and all usual sources as well. I recommend that too.
Great. And be sure to check out, go to the bars. If you go to a bar in downtown LA, there's at least a 40% chance Sed owns it. So just walk in any bar and say, you know, Sed, and you'll probably be all set. So, but man, it's great to see you, brother. And I am, again, looking forward to seeing you in person. And thanks for coming on the show. And, spreading some wisdom.
Yeah, anytime. Oh, much love, brother.
You too, man.
Thanks for having me on.
Hi, this is Jack Maxwell. I used to have a show called Booze Traveler. But the real Booze Traveler is Dan Dunn. And you're listening to him right now. It's called What We're Drinking.
All right. Before I get out of here today, I want to leave you with a joke. Guy walks into a bar after a long day at work and he orders a drink. As he sits there, mulling over his day, he hears a high-pitched voice say, "That shirt looks great on you." Man looks around, doesn't see anything. He gets back to his drink, thinking nothing more of it. A moment later, the voice returns, this time offering, "You seem like a great guy." Again, the man looks around, sees nothing, returns to his drink, wondering if he should get checked out by a professional. Finally, when his nerves have cooled and he believes the voice is gone, he hears, "I bet your parents are really proud of you." Slams down his drink and looks around wildly, frustrated in finding no possible source of the voice. He calls over the bartender. He says, "Barkeep, what's that voice I keep hearing?" Bartender says, "Oh, those are the peanuts. They're complimentary." And with that, I'm out of here. I want to thank Sed Moses joining us pick up a copy of his book, Pouring with Heart. Also want to thank G Love. Go online. Go see G Love. It's not special sauce. What is it? The liquid? G Love and the juice. That's it. The juice. I'm seeing him out here in Hollywood in March. Follow me at The Imbiber, at WWD underscore podcast. Appreciate you joining me as always, and look forward to talking at you next time. Bye.